There is panic in the streets about the Minnesota Twins. Let's talk about whether that panic is justified. Let's also talk about what we're seeing from Byron Buxton. It is historically good. It is fascinating to see. Well, let's get into all the stuff with the Minnesota Twins. This is Chin Music with Roy Smalley and Lavelle E. Neal III. I'm Jim Suhan. I'm the Lion Tamer on this show. This is part of the TalkNorth.com podcast network. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see the shows as they were released. Or you can find all the shows at TalkNorth.com. But we recommend subscribing at your favorite podcast app. It's just the easiest way. It's free. And thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. Thanks also to our sponsors, Aquarius Home Services, Minnesota Propane, and Better Edge. All right, gentlemen, before we get to Buxton, the Twins kind of blew up over the weekend, and a couple of ugly losses on Monday and Tuesday in Cleveland before they rebounded on Wednesday. I'll start here. I am trying not to be a knee-jerk reactionary when it comes to managerial decisions because, you know, listen, I've covered a lot of good managers. I've covered some really intelligent people, and they get second-guessed every day for every move, and it gets to be a little bit much. So I thought Rocco Baldelli coming out and saying, listen, and said this on Sunday, you know, we're gonna give Colome another chance. And then he goes out on Monday and Colome throws a pitch right down the middle to lose the ball game. And then Rocco comes out on Tuesday afternoon and says, okay, we're going to back off a little bit. We're going to find him some places to get settled. And then Tuesday night, Rocco brings Colome into a close game and Colome gets rocked. That was kind of the first time I looked at it and said, all right, maybe you could have taken a different approach there. But let's go big picture, Roy. How concerned are you about where this team is? And what do you think about the way Rocco has handled Colome this week?
Well, I'm somewhat concerned about the club because there are some very key players in the lineup that aren't hitting. I mean, that's when you can't. I don't think the Twins have enough pitching to have the same three guys have to carry the club all the time, This team is built on offense up and down the lineup, and they need, you know, Kepler to be healthy again and swinging it like we think he's going to. They really need Garver. They really need Polanco, and to some degree, they need Sano to be some semblance of his good former self. So I'm concerned about that, but not overly so because teams go through these kinds of things. It's one thing not to hit. It's another thing to be like Mitch Garver has been, where he really, since last year, it has been the same kind of lost look until yesterday. He had a breakout game with a couple of home runs. So, you know, I think that's kind of what happens most of the time. When teams break from the gate, either really pitching badly or not hitting at all, it looks really bad. The record gets bad. They could go through, you know, a 20-game stretch in June the same kind of way after having played really well for 2 months, and no one would be panicking as much. So I think that there's concern about whether or not the players that have not been hitting, this is going to be a trend longer term, but I don't think it is. And as far as Colome is concerned, bringing him in, the last point that you made, I mean, he's looking for low leverage situations to get him, you know, himself back to himself. And and I thought that was a good idea. That wasn't a low leverage situation. And I understand that, you know, sometimes he looks out there and says, I don't know who else to go to. I didn't want to really do this, but I don't know who else to go to. But that turned out badly, probably for a pretty good reason, and that was probably an unfortunate decision.
What did you think, Lavelle?
Well, all I know is that it's already happened twice this year in which the Twins have given up two runs in the inning without a ball being hit out of the infield. And Colome has been on the mound for both of those times. And I think, as I said the last time we talked, that if you're going to boast about having options for late inning situations, then you should be able to go to different people than Colome. You should be able to go to different people when someone is struggling, like Colome is struggling. The other thing that was concerning to me is that before the game, Wes Johnson, in a Zoom conversation with reporters, said that Colomy had got some work in before the game. So I'm like, okay, is this video work? Did he actually throw a few pitches in the bullpen? Because if he actually threw a handful of pitches in the bullpen and he was also used in the game, you know, I got issues with that, you know, considering what he's been through. But he could, he just couldn't find a play. And he doesn't look like he's losing confidence. He's trying to throw strikes, but it's not working right now. And I just think Rocco's got to use some other options there. Even if it's like Cody Stashek or someone, you know, put someone else out there to try to keep that game at one run. So you hope your offense could come back in the ninth inning and tie the game up. But as we saw, they pretty much added a couple of insurance runs. It was over. So I still think Colomé can be a good closer. It's just not clicking right now. But they got to put him in a position where he can kind of take a step back and regroup and then put him back in the ninth inning.
All right. I'll tell you one other thing. Speaking of the bullpen, excuse me, Jeff, for jumping in here, but I have a strong opinion that they need to run Alcala out there as often as he's ready to go out, mm-hmm. as he can. That stuff is just too good. He's got to figure it out.
They got 99 in a gun Tuesday.
Yeah, they have got to pitch him enough to let him figure it out, because when he's throwing strikes with 98 and he's got a really good slider, and he got Jose Ramirez out after in the inning that we were talking about when Colomé, walked the ballpark and hit somebody, and then Alcala came in to pitched a loop low and blew two fastballs right by him, and then great hit him in the shoulder, for another run. Now Jose Ramirez is up and he's throwing 98, and finally on a 2-2 pitch, he threw him a changeup, and Ramirez, terrific hitter. He swung and missed it, and he stood there and looked at Alcala like, "Are you kidding me with that 99 miles an hour? Now you're gonna throw me a changeup?" It was pretty great, Alcala is still raw. He doesn't have the command yet that he's gonna need to have to be elite. But man, I just think you have to get that stuff as elite, and you gotta keep running him out there till he figures it out.
My provocative question of the day. I still remember being at the press conference where Ron Gardenhire was announced as the new Twins manager. And I went up to Ryan on the side after the press conference and said, "Who's your closer?" He said, "Eddie Gordano." And now it sounds simple, right? Because he became an all-star closer. Back then, Eddie was viewed as a guy who didn't have very good stuff, who just pitched on sheer guts, very rarely got above 90 miles an hour. His slider or cutter, whatever it was, moved about an inch and a half. But Eddie had the guts for it, and Gardy wanted to go with him. Is there any way that Randy Dobnik, as a guy who has some savvy and some guts, could pitch in late innings, or is his stuff just not going to play there? Let's start with Lavelle here.
Randy Dobnik has been a starter for most of his young career. I do remember watching Eddie Werdado as a starter back in 1996.
He got hammered.
Yeah, when I was covering the Royals, and he came in and he was terrible, but Eddie forged a career as everyday Eddie since that point. So when it was time to look for a closer, Gardy could look to a guy who had been around in a relief role or late inning relief role and had been used 3 or 4 times a week and say, "I want you to close games." And you were betting based on experience that Eddie could do the job. I don't know how much Dobnak's experience puts him in a role where makes him a fit for that role. I don't know. I think he's on the team to be an innings eater and a fill-in starter when Rocco's going to want to go to a 6-man rotation to give his rotation an extra day of rest, because that's going to happen a couple of times here. Because Wes Johnson talked about that too the other day, that they're still cognizant of pitching in a pandemic shortened season last year and the long-term effect that could have on pitchers going from, throwing 70 innings to trying to throw 200. So I think Randy's more of a long guy. I would try Duffy, who's been a reliever for a couple of years. I would give Taylor Rogers that opportunity, although that takes away Rocco's matchup guy in the late inning situations. But I think I will look at some other guys than Randy Dobnak.
And that's the thing is, and I know I'm just kind of throwing it out there as a thought experiment more than anything else. I think it was, they do need a closer because the strength of the bullpen is being able to match up Taylor Rogers against lefties or the best hitters in the other lineup or in the highest leverage situations. Roy?
Well, I don't think it's Dobnak right now, but I will say this. I don't think it's a ridiculous, outlandish question that, you know, that you thought experiment that you pose. Because if Eddie Guardado can, you know, be an elite closer, then anybody can. And I say that from a stuff standpoint. But the big difference was, as you guys have mentioned, was Eddie's guts and B, his ability to throw strikes, and secondly his courage to throw strikes. You know, I mean, he just. You know, and what Eddie did should be an example to everybody. Look, I'm going to throw the ball over the plate all the time. And if you hit me, you hit me. But what else am I going to do? My stuff doesn't get better at when I'm 2-0. It's still the same stuff. So you're going to have to hit me on the first ball pitch, and you're going to have to hit me 0-1. You're going to have to hit me 0-2. You know, and that attitude, more than anything else, is the most important thing about pitching. And Dobnak is, I think that the movement on his fastball and the slider that he's developing, I think that could play in the late innings, especially in a role kind of like Tito Francona has used and now is using again, Brian Shaw, you know, in big situations in the sixth or seventh, and come in and be another one of those guys that can bridge to somebody late in the game. But Dobnak has to find the ability, A, to throw strikes all the time, and then B, have the courage to do that, to trust his stuff and say, you know, if they hit it, they hit it, but I've got no other choice. I mean, pitchers don't have a choice. They got to throw strikes. Alcala's in the same boat, only with better stuff. When he understands either gets his mechanics to the point where he's throwing strikes all the time, and then B, understanding that every once in a while he's going to get hit, but get hit on the first ball pitch or 0-1 or 1-2 or something. But, you know, don't be going 2-0 and walking people. That's the most important thing about all pitching, but especially late in the game. You have to come in throwing strikes. I got to tell you, Dennis Eckersley had good stuff, not great. Dennis Eckersley threw the ball, you know, low 90s maybe, had a little slurvy slider. The thing about Eckersley, when he came in the game, he had gotten his mechanics to the point where he could throw the ball on either outside corner, depending on the hitter. And he would just throw it there and throw it there. He says, here, I got a one-run lead. You can beat me with a home run. See if you can hit this ball an inch off the outside corner. See if you can hit that out. And he just kept throwing it and throwing it and throwing it out there and became a Hall of Fame closer. And you know, we're not seeing a lot of that from, you know, the late innings guys. And that's what you're going to have to be able to do, whoever it is. And I agree with Lavelle. I think Duffy's stuff from last year is late inning worthy. It's not this year. He's not throwing nearly as hard. He doesn't have the same command on his curveball. And he's going ball two on people. I mean, you can't do that. You have to understand that your stuff doesn't get better as the hitter gets in better counts.
I want to talk about Byron Buxton. He's been remarkable, historically good for a hitter this early in the season. We do want to thank our friends. It is grilling season. Please listen to this message from the Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shara, and do you really know what it costs to heat water at your home, cabin, or business? No? Well, we do. Based on data from the U.S. Department of Energy, the average annual savings for homes that heat their water with propane rather than electricity is $175. You can save energy and get 2.5 times as much hot water compared to the average electric water heater. Let's save energy and money with a cleaner, greener fuel. Propane. The right energy right now.
We'd also like to welcome and thank Better Edge. Better Edge, everybody's gambling on sports these days. You might as well use someone like Better Edge.
Hey everyone, it's Steven Strom, the host of the Strom Sports Show on TalkNorth.com. I'm here to tell you about BetterEdge. Combine your love for competition, social, and sports with BetterEdge, the sports betting exchange that actually gives back to its bettors. BetterEdge is a brand new locally based betting platform meant to connect users and attempt to add some coin to the bank. Completely legal and 100% fun. Compete against friends, sports insiders, and yourself with BetterEdge in a number of different sports and event competitions. Use the code STROM, STROM, for a free $10 when you sign up by visiting BetterEdge.com. That's BetterEdge.com.
All right, gentlemen, Byron Buxton, we've all been talking about him, covering him, analyzing him for a long time. Roy, you are the former Major League All-Star hitter. Tell us what you're seeing that is enabling him to be this dominant.
I think there are three things. First of all, we know he has the talent to do what he's doing. I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind. It's what we've all been waiting for a long time. We've watched him do this in the minor leagues, and he got to the big leagues, and it wasn't the same except for glimpses. And we'd have glimpses or we'd have a streak, and it would be, you know, as eye-popping as this had been. It was inconsistent, and it was his inability to keep that going. But he's got tremendous bat speed. He's got tremendous talent. The ball jumps off his bat when he hits it. I mean, it's just all things hitterish for Byron Buxton. But the second thing is that for whatever reason, whether it is the fact that he, you know, put on 20 pounds of muscle supposedly, and which, by the way, that's a lot of weight if it's just muscle. I mean, maybe it's 20 pounds, maybe it's 10, maybe it's 12, whatever it is. Maybe he steps in the box and feels just ultra strong, which gives him even more confidence to let his ability come through. Whatever it is, the main thing that he is doing differently this year is he's getting a good ball to hit, and he's laying off high fastballs that out of the strike zone that he used to swing and miss all the time. I mean, think about it. The image that you have of Byron Buxton up until this year: strikeout on high fastballs, strikeout on breaking balls low and away, mm-hmm. or get yourself 0-1 on swinging at a high fastball or a curveball, you know, breaking ball down and away, get yourself in a bad count, get a fastball 0-1 and foul it back. Now you're 0-2 and you've got no chance. And that's just time at bat after at bat after bat. We would see that. Now what we're seeing at bat after at bat after at bat is starting with the first pitch. You throw it in here from you know, stomach high to the knees, and I'm gonna kill it. You throw me a slider down and away, I'm going to take it. You throw me a high fastball, you know, every once in a while he'll pound a high fastball out of the ballpark. But for the most part, the ones that he really would have trouble hitting and it would get him, if he swings at it, he's either going to make a quick out or he's going to get himself in a tough count. He's not doing that. And so much of the time, he's not swinging until he gets something that he can hammer, and he's not missing it.
No, you're absolutely right. And that, what a beautiful at bat, that first at bat yesterday. He takes a pitch that we know when he's not going well, he might pop up or try to yank to left field, or he maybe hits foul down the left field line, and he just waits on it. And I mean, that was a Paul Molitor, Joe Mauer, Justin Morneau swing there, you know, a Kirby Puckett swing. You know, I'm not worried about that ball getting deep on me. My hands are good enough. I can still hit it out to right field.
Yeah, and when he starts hitting, excuse me, just a second, Lavelle, I'll shut up and let you chime in too. But I just want to say, I can't overstate how important it is to get a good ball to hit. You know, Ted Williams said the rule number one: to get a good ball to hit. And it, you know, that sounds like a blinding glimpse of the obvious, but if you watch most hitters, and this is what has been the most troubling, you know, the Twins lineup, why they're not hitting, they're going up and they're making outs on pitches that you would have to fight off with two strikes, but you ought not swing at early in counts, because once you're 0-1, you got problems, and once you're 1-2, you got bigger problems. And if you make a quick out on a pitch that's not your pitch, you know, shame on you early, you know, early in the count, shame on you. I mean, why take a two strike swing or swing at a nasty two strike pitch before you have two strikes? And it's the most important thing is to, you know, people talk about working counts and all that. You don't work counts by going up and taking and hoping, you know, hoping that he'll get to 3-1. Because that 3-1 pitch that you want to get, you could see that on the first ball pitch, and you know, you have to be ready for that. But you work counts by saying, I'm going to hit like it's 3-1 until I get a if he throws me a nasty pitch, I'm going to lay off of it, and then I'm going to do the best I can. And it's just so important. And that's what Byron's doing. He is not making quick outs or getting himself in tough counts right away.
Let's get to Lavelle here. I do want to say thank you to Aquarius Home Services. You'll be hearing from them later in the show. Also, if you'd like to sponsor this show or any of the shows across our ever-growing network, you can reach former Twins executive Karen Cleary at K-C-L-E-A-R-Y at talknorth.com. And wherever you listen to us, rate us, let us know how we're doing. Two of the smartest things I ever heard about hitting. One was from Rick Stelmazer. We're watching batting practice in the Metrodome one day, and he says, you know, these guys take thousands of swings every day. We don't need hitting practice. We need taking practice, which is brilliant. Because if you don't swing the right pitch, you're dead, as Roy was just saying. And the other one was Chuck Knobloch always, when the year Chuck Knobloch hit 341, he said, I either want to hit the cookie they give me on the first pitch, or I want to get them to 3-2 and just wear them out. Lavelle, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, and I think what we see him, what Buxton's doing right now, I think we start seeing glimpses of it last year when he had that tort month. I want to say August, he really heated up and started hitting home runs, and every time he touched the ball was for extra bases. And we talked to him after these games. He talked about knowing what the pitcher is going to throw, knowing where he likes to throw a slider, you know, when he's behind an account. Knowing the guys have started him off with first pitch fastballs. You could tell that the mind was working, that he had a plan when he went to the plate, and he had a better understanding of how pitches were approaching him. And so once he got a pitch to hit, he started not missing it. And I think he carried that on into this year, because when he's getting a pitch to hit, he's not missing, and he is putting some beautiful swings on these pitches. Just a powerful, authoritative swing, as Mike Tyson used to say, with murderous intentions. And we're seeing him do damage. So I think even yesterday, I think one of his hits was to the opposite field. I think
the home run was the opposite field.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so he's now going with the pitch. He understands how he's being worked and making adjustments accordingly. He feels healthy. He's stronger. And he said in spring training, the ball was coming off his bat better because of the muscle he had. So we're watching a guy that's just putting it all together and is setting himself up to having one fantastic season, which is crazy because I kept maintaining during spring training that, you know, if Buxton stays healthy and plays well, the Twins aren't going to be stopped. And Buxton is playing great baseball right now, but the Twins are scuffling.
That's just why baseball is so complex, and you need contributions from so many different players. No one player ever carries him. I mean, hey, look at what Mike Trout's postseason career in Anaheim. He's the best player in the game, been the best player in the game, and for a long time has never played in a postseason. Two more topics I want to get to today, and two of the most important players on the roster, Kenta Maeda and Nelson Cruz. Let's start with Maeda. Lavelle, start with you. Are you what you're seeing so far? Question for both of you. Is it concerning, and is it simply a possibility that Kenta Maeda just hasn't pitched in cold weather very often in his career as a starting pitcher?
Well, I mean, that's possible. It just looks like he's centering a lot of his pitches, that he's hitting the fat part of the strike zone with a lot of his offerings, and teams are pounding him and punishing him for making those mistakes. It seems like the quality of his stuff is the same. Seems like the fastball is the same. I don't know if they need to think about sequencing and when he's throwing pitches at what time in the count. I know lefties have worn him out in the past, but he started spinning his slider to them more last year and had great success with that. It doesn't look like he's having that same success this year. But they've got to get him fixed, and maybe it's the warm weather. That came up yesterday during the Twins-Cleveland game on YouTube, because former Twins players – Latroy Hawkins and Jim Tomey both said, you know, once the weather gets warmer, it helps everybody. But, you know, that shouldn't stop a team from getting off to a good start just because the weather's cold. And it shouldn't stop a pitcher either from being able to throw strikes. But we'll see. I just, that's a little, it's just a little concerning because I would not have expected Maeda to have a six ERA through the first month of the season. I tell you that much.
What do you think, Roy?
He doesn't have command, the command that he had last year with any of his pitches. And it starts with the fastball. I think LaBelle is right from a velocity standpoint on his fastball and cutter. There, it's similar to last year. It's not like all of a sudden he's throwing 3 miles an hour slower. His fastball is 91, 92, which is plenty enough with all the other stuff that he has. He's got five pitches that he'll throw. He was successful last year because he would throw any of them in any count for a strike or in a great spot if it was just barely not a strike. And LaBelle's also right about the fact that ain't happening this year. He's spinning cutters and sliders up there in the middle of the plate, and they're getting hammered. He hasn't made guys conscious of his fastball because he had – last year, if you recall, you'll think about it. He was, whenever he threw a fastball, it would be on the inside corner or the outside corner, or it'd be up at a high strike zone, and it would shock hitters. They didn't hit his fastball the way big league hitters should hit a 91 or 92 mile an hour fastball, because they weren't absolutely sure it was coming, and when it did come, they threw it in a great spot. He has not done that yet. He's not established. I've got a 92 mile an hour fastball that I can get in under your fists, or I can paint the outside corner with it. It's not done that yet. When a guy hasn't really established his fastball, he tends to get afraid to throw it, and he goes to other stuff. And I won't say that it's absolutely a conscious decision on the hitter's part, but when they're not afraid of the fastball, they get a lot better on breaking stuff. And then if the breaking stuff settles in the middle of the zone, it gets hammered. So it really is just a question of his changeup. We saw the other day in Cleveland, the changeup would float. It would start off the plate outside to a left-hander and go even further away. And you know, the changeup and the slider that he has, that he worked with so well last year, They would start as strikes and end up as balls after, you know, when the guys would swing at it. And think about all the bad contact. What we talked about last year, I mean, he struck a lot of guys out, but when he wasn't striking them out, think about last year, how much weak contact that he would induce. And it's because he was throwing five pitches any time, any count, pretty much where he wanted to. And then when he threw the ball down the middle, I remember a lot of breaking balls in the middle of the plate last year. When guys would either take it, they'd swing and miss it, they'd foul it back, like almost like they were shocked that it was a good pitch to hit. It's a question of command for him. The stuff's not different. He just, you know, I believe he'll get his command back, and then, you know, he will be really good again. But it's really not too complicated right now.
No, and completely agree with what you're saying. Last topic, I guess we could have like done a more panic-oriented show, but there's really some interesting good stuff going on. And what I've been fascinated is not only Nelson Cruz swinging the bat well, he's running really well at that age. I'm amazed by this guy, and he's just been a joy to have around. Let's wrap it up with LaBelle and then Roy on Nelson Cruz. Whatever thoughts you want to offer.
Well, Nelson's been pretty entertaining to watch. And the funny part is, before, was it Monday's game or Tuesday's game against the Indians, Rocco flip-flopped Cruz and Buxton in the order. He put Buxton third and Cruz fourth. And the theory was that he didn't want Cruz slowing things up for Buxton if Buxton hit his way on base. So, of course, Rocco flip-flops the two, and Cruz is the guy that hits the triple. You know, so I thought that was pretty hilarious. So it's been pretty remarkable. And he's been quoted talking about he wants to show people how fast he is. He is definitely not the slowest man on the team. He definitely could beat Williams Astudillo in the foot race. He probably could beat Garver, probably could beat Jeffers. And he's a medical marvel. It shows you all the work he puts in during the offseason. He puts his workouts on Instagram, and it's paying off. So it's, It's cool to see that a guy who's not that much younger than you are is out there getting it done on the base path.
The operative phrase for you guys is he's a joy to watch in all phases of his life, and that we're able to get glimpses of. And I agree wholeheartedly with that. Lavelle, you bring up a couple of things that spark some real interest for me. One of them is the lineup. Generally speaking, I mean, Cruz has hit third all these for the time he's been here for the most part because he's the best hitter they have on the team. And from a manager standpoint, making out a lineup, you put your guy in the third spot first, and then you figure it out, right? I mean, because for this reason, A, you need him up a lot of times. I mean, you don't want him down further in the lineup and say, well, I don't get to him enough. I mean, I just get the feeling that Rocco would, you know, if Nelly didn't get up in the first inning, it would kill. It would really bother Rocco, you know. And you know, they like Thunder right away. You know, Kepler leading off when he was, you know, it could be 1-0 first ball pitch of the game. Same with Donaldson. Same with Cruz. So you put your best hitter in the third spot. If Byron Buxton can become Nelson Cruz-ish in terms of being, you know, that kind of hitter, hitting him third and Cruz fourth satisfies an awful lot of stuff in the lineup. So that's really, it's going to be interesting to me to see, you know, how that plays out. But you couldn't put Byron in third up 1, 2, or 3 before because his on-base percentage just wasn't there. Now the way he's looking, you can bat him anywhere. And if he can handle hitting third, it's going to be huge for the Twins. Secondly, back to Cruz and being a joy to watch and a medical marvel, as Lavelle said. I said this on the broadcast the other night, and this is remarkable to me. You wonder when Nelson Cruz is going to slow down mechanically, you know, slow down at the plate, right? We all say, well, every player says, yeah, I get older and I'm not as quick as I used to be. You know, I can't get to the fastball as well, you know, whatever. Nelson Cruz has two things going for him that have made the longevity, the remarkable longevity, what it is. One is his hitting mechanics. He's got an incredibly simple, efficient, straightforward swing, getting the big end of the bat to the ball. And he does it time in and time out. When your mechanics are that good, your mechanics can make up for when you start losing it a little bit. Because if you start losing it and you've got bad mechanics or you've got troublesome mechanics, let's say, you know, there's a loop in the swing or, you know, you have to be just exactly right on your timing. You get older, you lose it a little bit and you can't overcome that. And Nelson Cruz's mechanics are so simple and so efficient that I think that keeps him going. The second thing is he's really smart. And you talked to Lavelle, you talked about Byron figuring pitchers. I think Nelson Cruz figures pitchers really well. He's got going into the Pirates series at home, he was the top slugging percentage leader in Major League Baseball against fastballs, and he was fourth against changeups. How do you do that? How are you that good against that when you play off those pitches that play off each other that well? And we saw him, you know, to Lavelle's point about him hitting the triple, gets two strikes. Guy makes a good pitch, and he hits it off the right field fence down the line. He can hit the ball off or over the fence anywhere on the ballpark. And I think it's because his mechanics are great, his mind is really good, and he's not afraid to not try to hit the ball to left field. And it is. I'll go back to our original statement. He's a joy to watch.
Really loving the show. I love having Roy and Lavelle on the same show talking baseball. This has been a blast. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. We will be back next week. And something interesting is going to happen this week, for better or worse. I think it's going to be a fascinating season. So thank you, gentlemen. Thanks to everyone who listens. Thanks to our sponsors. And keep listening to TalkNorth.com. We got the best people in the market.
Hey, this is Mike Russo from the Worst Seats in the House podcast. Are you looking for great-tasting clean water in your home or cabin? How about an AC or furnace tune-up? If so, go to my one-stop shop for water treatments, plumbing, and heating and cooling, Aquarius Home Services. Aquarius can be your experts for just about anything. If your water is too hard or has bad odor or tastes funky, they're the local authorized dealer for the revolutionary non-electric Kinetico water system. And if you need to get your furnace or AC running properly or a whole new heating or cooling system, they do that too. For more information, go to AquariusHomeServices.com or call 651-356-8542. That's AquariusHomeServices.com or 651-356-8542.